Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning young adult author, CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with my friend and fellow young adult author, Catherine Briggs. Catherine Briggs crafted her first monster story at age 3. Since graduating from crayons to laptop, she continues to devour and weave fantastical tales while enjoying oolong or chai tea. She, her co-adventurer husband, and rescue dog reside outside Houston, where she classically educates amazing middle school students, teaches ESL to adults, and studies other languages. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, CJ. I'm so excited to be back on the Read Clean YA with CJ podcast. This is so fun.
Oh, I am so thrilled to have you back. And for my listeners who might be newer, you might not realize that Katie has been a guest on this show before. She was actually my very first interview. So this is so much fun for me to be able to have you back again and be able to talk about book 2 in your Threshold duology. And it's called The Immortal Abyss. We talked about book 1, The Eternity Gate, right? I always want to call it The Eternity Key. And I love the book. It's so great. I don't know why I always get stuck on the name.
Actually, I really like that.
Thank you.
Where were you like a couple of years ago when we were titling these?
I don't know. But The Eternity Gate, which is such a great story. I loved the book. And we go into that story and talk about the themes and all of that. So if you haven't already listened to that episode, I encourage you to check it out. It is episode number 2, which is the first of all of my author interviews. So check that out and you can listen to that. After you listen to this one, we'll still try to keep this as spoiler-free as we possibly can. But I'm excited to dive into talking about it with you today. Could you tell us a little bit about Immortal Abyss without spoilers, if possible?
For sure. And thank you so much for your kind words. And ditto, I love Carly's books so much. So if you haven't read those either, those are awesome.
Thanks.
But to answer your question, the way I normally describe the Immortal Abyss is that in order to seize the throne from the corrupt dynasty, Tol must summon this mythological legend to life. And I love mythology. I love old stories. And I just had so much fun playing with that.
I love it. I love how you do weave in different mythologies into your stories. It's something that I've seen you do or know you might do with other stories in the future. You never know. You never know these things. And it is so much fun because I think sometimes the mythologies are things that we forget about. So when you can pull that into a current new story, it's a lot of fun to watch that come to life again in a new way.
Well, they're so beautiful. And I'm an educator. I teach at classical Christian schools. I teach middle schoolers. And as part of that, I'm reading so many more myths and just loving them, loving how they actually mirror the truth in the Bible in different ways and contrast to in a way that's just so beautiful and interesting to read. It almost like enhances my understanding of the truth in a way, if that makes sense. So yeah. I'm learning to love them so much.
Oh, I love that. That's so neat. So what mythologies did you kind of play off of for this story?
For the Immortal Abyss, I think really I was just inspired by just the massive epicness of the Greek myths and just wondering always with fantasy, what if we could have an elemental gifting, which is part of the fantastical system of the Threshold duology and specifically in the Immortal Abyss, what if we could hold and wield fire? What if that was kind of an illicit gifting too? And how would you deal with that? I really enjoyed incorporating some of the cardinal virtues into how the characters use their fire. It's divided between magnificence, justice, wisdom, and temperance. And just kind of fleshing that out in a fantasy way was super fun. And I was so thrilled when a friend recognized that and pointed it out. And I knew I was like, oh, I have some geeky friends. This is great.
That is so fun. And I love that you weave in just the deeper things like those cardinal virtues and weaving that in to fantasy. And this is something you and I have talked about before, is how fantasy can be a vehicle to touch on some deeper themes and virtues and kind of echo in our hearts in a unique way as we walk through another world. So could you share with our listeners a little bit more about why you decided to take
the Threshold duology through a fantastical fantasy world rather than weaving some of the themes that are on your heart, like through a contemporary story? Why fantasy?
Oh, that's a good question. Because I remember when actually The Eternity Gate was not all that fantastical. It felt a little bit more like just a historical novel. And then I remembered when I realized the main character in The Eternity Gate could just walk through fire. And I thought, oh, that's not real life.
Yes.
I think for fantasy, being able to kind of walk with characters through these situations and fight monsters and explore new lands, we do these things in real life. We have huge challenges that we have to overcome. And I think fantasy, and so many great thinkers have said this so much more eloquently than I'm about to, but fantasy allows us to kind of, I guess, practice almost those situations, and it can encourage us in our own challenges. I can't remember the exact quote, but there aren't really dragons here in real life that we know of. I mean, if one shows up, that'd be actually really terrifying. But again, like the challenges in life are kind of like dragons that need to be slayed, and we can't do it alone. Fantasy shows us that.
Yes. I love that quote. It's something to the effect of fantasy doesn't tell us that dragons are real. Children know that they're real, but fantasies show us that dragons can be slayed, or something to that effect.
Yes.
And I love that quote. And at the moment, I can't remember who even says it, but it stuck with me as well, because it is that idea of there are big things in life that feel like giants or dragons or terrifying storms that come up that we don't know how to combat in our own selves. And a fantasy kind of puts a face to that hard thing that we're facing, you know, and in a unique way, because a villain in a story gives us that bad guy to fight after, right? But in fantasy, when that villain can have so much power or be a dragon or be so terrifying, it does kind of let us take the emotions we feel about this hard thing we're facing in our life. And it's like, yeah, like you said, it feels like a dragon. It feels like this monstrous wizard who can do whatever he wants. And how do you ever stop it? And the fantasy stories that echo eternity end up showing us that there is a way to defeat even the fiercest of dragons. And that is something that we can then bring back with us into our lives. And knowing that we serve a God who can defeat the fiercest of dragons. And no matter what we face, we can face them with him, and we will be victorious in the end. And the best fantasies show good overcoming evil ultimately in the end. And that's what echoes in our hearts, I think.
I agree. That was so beautifully put. And also, I think it makes us take our real lives seriously in the areas that feel gray more seriously. Same with science fiction. I think it does the exact same thing, because it magnifies and sharpens real life.
Yeah. One of the things I love about these speculative genres, and my stories, as anyone who talks to me about them for very long will know, are the softest version of sci-fi you can possibly get. These are just our world, but with lots of fun extra tech and stuff. But I love the idea that sci-fi can just explore future possibilities and ideas and take a thought and explode it into its worst or best possible conclusion, and, you know, kind of envision what the future could look like if certain things keep playing out as they currently are. It takes a different track than fantasy, but both essentially blow something up into making it bigger than what it currently is, right? So fantasy might take the hard thing in life and make it a dragon. Sci-fi takes this crazy issue that people are struggling with and makes it a dystopia, right? So it gives us an opportunity to explode it so that we can actually see it differently and kind of break our brains of preconceived notions and ideas. Or yeah, like you said, the gray areas, they become a little less gray because now we're looking at it in a bigger, full-blown kind of capacity, which I think allows us to explore it in a new way.
And it's such a responsibility to write in these genres too, because they do shape the way people see the future, the problems of the future, even heaven and hell. I was talking with some colleagues about where the mental pictures we have for even like hell, where they come from, these classic works like Paradise Lost, The Divine Comedy, The Odyssey, and The Aeneid. I mean, that's kind of crazy to think.
Yeah.
And we don't know. And same with heaven. A lot of our visions in our minds come from these classic works. And what a great conversation to have, and what a good reason to read really clean, well-written science fiction and fantasy from a Christian worldview, to wrestle with these thoughts and enjoy thinking about them until we see heaven and know the truth.
Yes, until we see clearly and are known as clearly as we are known by God. And it is something we talked about actually right before we started recording. I was saying to Katie that I loved the first time I read The Last Battle in the Narnia series, that moment when Aslan recreates the worlds, and that just brought to life the Bible for me in a new way, as he was rolling up like a scroll what once was and breathing life and creating a whole entire new world again after the defeat of evil. It blew my mind as a young person, and it gave me a hunger for eternity at that point as such a young kid that I believe has echoed throughout my life because of that moment of thinking, this is what God's going to do one day. He is going to change everything. He's going to take away all the evil. He's going to take all the heartache, all the brokenness, and he's going to make something new. And that's where I'm going to then be able to live with him. And knowing that this story was just a small echo of something so much bigger, it planted in my heart an eternal perspective that I'm so thankful for, that sometimes I don't even stop to think about how it began. Because, you know, I grew up in a wonderful family. I love the Lord, and I've followed him for many years, but I think that particular moment was a defining, shaping moment in my life because of a fantasy story that God used to be like, yeah, this is actually something I'm going to do one day. And it took words that I'd heard spoken many times. You know, you grow up in church, you hear a lot of things a lot of times, but that just made it come to life in a new way and gave me an excitement I hadn't felt before for that eternal moment that we will one day experience.
Yes, I so love that, and I so relate, because The Horse and His Boy by C.S. Lewis did that for me. I think the Lord used that story in my life to help me better understand the omnipresence of God, that he really is with us all the time, which made me read the Bible with it whet my appetite to see that in the Bible and to see that in my own life. Story is so powerful, and what a cool gift.
Yeah. One of the things that we both, I believe, are really passionate about is taking some of these deep, eternal biblical themes and weaving them into our stories. And I know you've done that with your duology. And could you just share with our listeners some of those types of themes that you have woven into your stories for them to discover?
Absolutely. Yes. And you remind me of a letter that Tolkien wrote, basically saying he didn't like allegory very much. And the harder you try to write allegory, the less like allegory it seems. And the farther you try to distance yourself from allegory, the more your story will seem like allegory, which makes me laugh, especially as I look at that in both Lewis's and Tolkien's works. But
Yes,
for anybody, regardless of your belief system, what you truly believe, or at least where your affections lie, they are going to show up in your writing, and which is interesting. I mean, enjoy your stories. Please enjoy the stories that you read. Don't just go tear them apart, but it is interesting when it pops up. And for both the Eternity Gate book one and the Immortal Abyss book two, I can see usually like thoughts I've been having for 5 years will pop into each book. And then, you know, there are new thoughts that will pop up into the next book is what I'm starting to notice. And definitely in those books, I've thought a lot about worthiness, what makes us worthy, and personal responsibility too, and just friendship. What does good friendship look like? And also, especially for the Immortal Abyss, and I write this in the books that I sign, never give up on the good ever. And just having seen people, especially my sister, Jessica, walk through that in difficult ways so beautifully inspired me with my character, my main character, Toll, who, despite so many obstacles, just cannot let go of what she knows is the right thing to do.
Wow. And in a world where so much darkness seems to prevail, in this current world in which we live, to never give up on the good, to remember that there is light that can break through that darkness. Like, that's such a powerful reality. That's a hope we have as Christians. It's a hope that couldn't be sustained apart from Christ, right? And mm-hmm. that's something we offer to the world around us that they might not be able to understand how we hold on to hope and good in such an evil, dark world. But because of the God we serve, we can do that and then show it even through stories, which I love that that's something that you have echoing through the Immortal Abyss. And you also mentioned just talking about worthiness and friendship and community and that kind of thing and our own responsibility. And I think we live in a world that's so self-focused, that is so focused on wanting to have, I want my name in lights, or I want to promote myself, or I want to be seen. And then to actually be like, no, I should take responsibility for who I am, and I should care for the people God has placed in my life and invest in that community and actually take personal responsibility. Like, those kinds of people are the ones who transform those around them, because they're no longer looking just at themselves. They're looking at others. And I think we discover that there's a worthiness in that too, in a life lived that way. There's something that God has for that person that can only be found when they're not focused as much on them, mm-hmm. and they're focused on doing what is set before them that they know they need to do. And when they're caring for the community around them and letting that community shape and walk with them through life, that there's a worthiness, a calling, a purpose that you find there that I don't think you can really find until you're in that kind of heart space.
Exactly. And even the term personal responsibility sounds so unattractive. It's like, oh man, like, really?
We're gonna daunting. Go
there? Yes. But then I think even, again, just people I've watched in my lives, even people who are genuine victims, and being a victim is such a popular trope in fiction. I mean, we've all had that moment, and it does matter and it does hurt. The people who I've seen persevere through that by the grace of God just blows my mind. Like, it's watching something divine here on earth, I think. And it's dark. I mean, fantasy and science fiction can get dark, hopefully not gratuitously so. And I can speak for your books that it doesn't, it's honest. Yeah. It doesn't go there. And even that contrast against the light sharpens the light, and it's just so beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. There needs to be some dark smudges in order for that light to shine. But I love how you put it, not gratuitous. Like, it's not, and it's also not glorifying the darkness. And when we glorify darkness, then there's less space for light, because the light can break through even there. But when we're focused all in darkness, it's much harder to then want to even turn to the light, because it exposes so much. So, which is, you know, a whole other rabbit trail there. But
yes.
But I do love that excellent fantasy, excellent sci-fi, these speculative stories often are epic on some level. Well, you know, these stories that bring you on an adventure. They take you to places that you wouldn't go otherwise. They take you on these life and death adventures, these high, high stakes, and they show you darkness, but it's so that you can see the light breaking over the horizon in that last battle, kind of a moment when all seems like all hope is lost, and then it's not, you know. And I love how speculative fiction does that. My favorite fantasy and sci-fi stories, at least, those are the ones I tend to gravitate to, the ones that are epic adventures that bring you to that dark moment, but it's only so that you can see the light when it passes over that horizon in a unique, mind-blowing way that will really forever transform you.
And we want to go there. We want, even though it's hard, hard is not bad, and we want to walk that path, and we want to see that victory. We want to, in the Immortal Abyss, travel through this kind of forbidden land with potentially monsters and things like that. And we want to survive, and we want to win the day, or we want to travel through your books, and we want to escape these totalitarian.
You're great. Totalitarian.
Thank you. Like, oh my gosh. These places, and we want to bring justice, and we want to save our friends, and we want to overcome impossible odds. So it's fun too. And it's that's satisfying for us, because I think that's what we're meant for.
I agree. For some reason, God has chosen to work through people, which is a shocking, mind-blowing thing when you actually stop and think about it, that the God who created everything decided that he was going to work through people, and not just people, but he was like, I'm going to choose the weak people. I'm going to choose the ones no one else wants. I'm going to make heroes of those the world would completely overlook. And the Bible is full of men and women who God chose to do that with, from David, who literally Samuel was like, didn't even really consider. David's dad wasn't even going to bring him out to be considered for king, to Ruth, who was a Moabite woman who no one would have picked to be in the line of the Messiah. And yet these are the people God chose. And he constantly does that. And he still does that. And there's something about these characters that we watch as they start in a weak place, in a position where not really sure they're our best hope, but then we watch them choose to fight, choose to go, choose to overcome. And as they do, something I think inside of us is inspired to also choose to fight, choose to keep going for, choose to overcome, and recognize that in our weakness, God can work. He chooses to work. He delights to work, which is the most epic adventure any person can experience, is letting God take full control of their lives and walking that journey with him. And I think our speculative stories, you know, even I think that's what the echo is. That's why Narnia stays with people. That's why fantasy can stick with you, because it's that echo of something so much bigger, so much more eternal.
I love that. I love that. And then the biggest, greatest adventure is yet to come, which is so fun.
Yeah. And mind-blowing, really. Like the things that we can conceive of now are nothing in comparison to what eternity holds for us. And I really believe that as we can live in light of that eternity, our lives, our heartache, our pain, our trauma, the times where we are victims even, that all can be redeemed, and God can use that to shape us, to prepare us, and to allow us to live for something so much bigger. You know, our stories, our characters, they go through hard things, but it's never unintentional. No pain is wasted for us as authors, right? The pain must have a purpose. If there's no purpose, our editors would all cut it. You know, that you wouldn't read that part of the story. It has to matter. And how much more with the author of our lives? And God never wastes anything. And also, this journey of life is to bring us to something so much better. And like you said, the best is yet to come.
I love that. Oh my gosh. You're full of great quotes. I love it.
Oh, thank you. See, this is why it's great to have conversations with your friends. They're so encouraging.
Yes.
So this time is flying by. So we only have a few minutes left, but I do love to give listeners a bit of a peek behind the scenes at the author I'm talking to. And so we've been talking a ton about fantasy and speculative stories and our own books and all of this, but when you create these crazy big worlds, what is a unique place where you've been inspired with a story idea? Is there any places where you've kind of had that, oh, I want to write this story, and it's been a kind of unique or weird place that you didn't expect to come up with a story idea?
Oh, I love that. That's so fun. I mean, I think I have had story ideas from dreams. That's super rare and super strange. I don't know. I mean, we all have it, so I guess it's not that strange. My favorites are when I'm just living normal life and I see something interesting and the what if question pops into my mind. And I think, oh my gosh, it'd be so interesting to tweak that and write something about it. For me personally, physical places, I definitely, for the Eternity Gate in particular, was very inspired by a trip to South Korea. I just thought their country, their culture, my friends who live there were just so, so interesting and just really neat people. Usually, I don't even know how this happens. I'm sure it's the same for you. But usually I will have just a random idea that really, really strikes me. There's a particular one in The Immortal Abyss that occurs, or two, at the midpoint, right around the middle. And then one about at the three quarters mark. And I knew, oh, I need to write this book. And The Eternity Gate has a scene like that. Future books, there's usually some kind of core scene that really means something to me. I don't know if that answers your question.
I love it. I think it's so fun to hear from different authors where their story ideas come from. But one thing I know for myself when I'm answering this kind of a question is that I usually have the seed of an idea and then it gets planted in my brain and becomes something totally different. You know, like you plant an apple seed, it becomes an apple tree. It looks totally different by the time it's done growing. And I think that's how most of my stories are. I start pulling a thread and next thing I know, it's this whole new thing. But it is fun where story ideas begin. I love that South Korea was one of those places for you and that you were inspired by an entire culture that is different from what you grew up with. And I think that that's one of the things I love about stories is how it can open up new cultures and places to our imaginations.
And it's amazing. One small detail can just change everything. For something I'm working on right now, I realized that one of the protagonists wears headphones all the time. And what he's listening to really matters. And it seems like so mundane, but it changed everything and just all these things clicked into place. I love when that happens. It's so funny. Like headphones, really?
I love it. It's so fun. I think sometimes I put something in a story that I don't even realize is significant. And then when it becomes significant later, it's this mind-blowing moment, which is so much fun.
Oh, I love that. Yes, it's like a little gift for you and your readers.
Yes, yes, for sure. Well, we are almost out of time. So could you share with our listeners where they can connect with you and find your books?
Absolutely. My favorite place to connect is my story newsletter. And you can sign up for that at www.catherinebriggs.com. And I email about every 2 to 3 months. And it usually includes writing updates and podcasts like this, recommendations, book recommendations, and just nerdy fun thoughts that I might be having during that time. I also offer my short story collection as a welcome gift for new subscribers. And then I'm also on Instagram at @CatherineBriggs_author. And I do post some fun pictures there on a weekly basis. And then as far as getting the books, I think you asked that, they're available pretty much wherever stories are sold.
Perfect. And she normally also has a fun picture of her dog at the end of her newsletters,
right.
Which is it's a fun bonus. And all of your newsletters are a lot of fun to read. I love your updates. So I encourage you to connect with Katie through her newsletters on Instagram, wherever you like connecting with authors, and pick up her stories. They are so much fun. But for today, Catherine Briggs, thank you so much for being on Read Clean YA with CJ. I loved getting to talk with you again today.
Thank you so much. And as a little bonus, I think by the time this podcast drops, we will all be able to grab CJ's new book, Captive of Talionis, off Kickstarter. So please join me in grabbing that book. It's going to be super good, I know. But thank you so much for having me here today.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed listening in on this conversation with Catherine Briggs. Katie is a great friend, and I always love getting to have a great chat with her. And she's also a fantastic storyteller. If you're looking for a fun fantasy adventure with high stakes and fantastic plot twists, deep and powerful themes, then I encourage you to check out her Threshold duology. And if thinking about speculative fiction has been a fun endeavor for you today, then I'd love to hear from you and hear what you think about Katie's and my thoughts on science fiction and fantasy and the speculative genres. In personal news, I am excited to announce that when this episode airs on April 30th, we will be one day away from my Kickstarter launching for Captive of Talionis, which is so exciting. Captive of Talionis's Kickstarter will launch on May 1st and it will run until May 23rd. And this is the time you'll be able to grab all 4 books in my award-winning Talionis series, and you can join in all of the fun we're going to have. I have some really exciting things planned and some fun extras in store for this Kickstarter as we end my first series that I think you're going to really enjoy. So I encourage you to check out the Kickstarter for Captive of Talionis. I'll have a link in the show notes. And this is going to be a way for you to get signed copies, fun extras, and pre-order an early release copy of Captive of Talionis, which is the 4th and final book in the Talionis series. Every choice, every challenge, every battle, it's all been leading to this. So please be sure to check it out. If you have any questions about Kickstarter, you can email me, cj@cjmolacy.com. Thank you so much for listening to Read Clean YA with CJ. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean, young adult books too. And don't forget to check out the Kickstarter for Captive of Talionis. Have a great day, my friends.